The federal government is the biggest buyer in the world, and some items are harder to come by than others.
T-Rex!
Roar!
I'm a Tyrannosaurus. I'm the biggest carnivore in the Cretaceous forest. Gonna grow some giant legs.
Now, you may have heard, there's a certain dinosaur skeleton that just arrived at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History. It's going to be a centerpiece of the museum's new dinosaur hall in 2019. But for us, it's a case study in government acquisition. SANT Director Kirk Johnson joins us now. Kirk, good morning.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Fine, thank you. So tell us first, how did you learn about this T-Rex, which I understand goes by a couple of different names? One is the nation's T-Rex.
That's right. You know, I've been a paleontologist for a long time, so I've been following the discovery of this animal. It was found in 1988 in eastern Montana on the Army Corps of Engineers land at Fort Peck Reservoir. It was excavated by the Museum of the Rockies in Montana. 6 or 7 years ago, the Museum of the Rockies spoke with the Secretary of the Smithsonian with the idea that we might be able to get a T-Rex for the National Mall. So it's been about a 10-year process to get this animal to Washington, D.C.
And tell us about the process that you had to go through, the acquisition of it. You had to, I understand, talk with several different sources, and it's probably something that a lot of people want to hold on to themselves.
Exactly. You know, the fossils that are collected on federal land around the United States are put into a variety of federal repositories. Some of them are actually government repositories like the Smithsonian Institution, and others are standalone private museums like the Museum of the Rockies or the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And in those private museums, they hold the specimens on behalf of the American public. And in this case, we had a three-way partnership between the Smithsonian Institution, the Museum of the Rockies, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And then that was sort of the nature of the conversation, to get those three organizations aligned around the idea of moving the Tyrannosaurus Rex from Montana to Washington, D.C.
Well, and we, as people who have read the papers or seen the TV, we all know that it came by FedEx, and it's going to be quite a process to assemble it. So what were the terms of the deal? And in general, it seems like, you know, with these major acquisitions, they happen so rarely that this is something that all parties want to make sure is done to the letter, all I's dotted, T's crossed.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the key point is here that local repositories that hold federal specimens on behalf of the public put a lot of resources into holding those specimens. So as a general rule, it's important for the agency not to be at all inconsiderate when considering a move of a specimen. So we wanted to make sure that the Museum of the Rockies themselves were very comfortable with the idea of the T-Rex coming to Washington, D.C., so it didn't appear as the Army Corps telling the Museum of the Rockies what to do. And the way it worked out was that the Museum of the Rockies was able to acquire a second T-Rex on Army Corps land in Montana. So they actually had two, which made them very willing to consider the idea of having one of the Montana dinosaurs come to Washington, D.C. And that's what we were really seeking, was a win-win-win situation where the Corps was able to spread its resources across a variety of museums. The Museum of the Rockies didn't lose the exhibit potential of having a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and the Smithsonian gained the ability to have a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Because if you think about it, a museum that collects and holds something on behalf of the federal government puts a lot of its resources into doing that, and it shouldn't be taken quite simply to simply move those. It needs to be really a thoughtful process.
And how early did you get involved, did the Smithsonian get involved in the care of this piece, even before it was laid out that it would eventually end up in your museum?
Well, we've been on the director of the museum for 18 months, and I started talking about this about 6 months before I arrived. After I was selected for the position, one of the first things on the docket was this uncompleted deal with the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And so one of my first actions was to go out to Montana and speak with the people at the Museum of the Rockies and also to the Army Corps folks in Omaha and get a better understanding of the potential arrangement. We had a number of different situations where specimens are asked to move, but it makes no sense for them to move. So it really was incumbent on me to make sure that this made a lot of sense for all the agencies involved.
All right. So we all know that it happened by FedEx, but what were some of the other precautions that had to take place?
Well, we couldn't resist sending it by FedEx. It was just too tempting to FedEx the T-Rex. But we did, what we did was we worked with conservators from all three of the agencies, from the Smithsonian, Museum of the Rockies, and the Army Corps. And we basically did a collective condition report on the skeleton. The animal has over 200 bones, and they're all disarticulated and packed into 16 wooden crates with the sort of the highest museum standards, triple checked by representatives of each of the agencies. And we've arranged a 50-year loan from the Museum of the Rockies and Army Corps to the Smithsonian. At the end of that loan, the specimen would return to Montana.
And is that, are those typical terms? I know that nothing like this is really typical, but when you are working out a major acquisition, when any museum is working out a major acquisition like that, is it typical to say that something like 50 years and then we'll go back?
Again, one of the situations here is that it depends what the use of the object is. And in our particular case, this Tyrannosaurus rex skeleton will be anchoring the new exhibition that we plan to open on the National Mall in 2019. Now, we think that exhibitions have about a 35 to 50-year lifespan, so we didn't want to encumber the Smithsonian with the obligation of removing a centerpiece from the exhibit during the life of the exhibit. And that was kind of the logic for the length of the loan. The other agencies will do loans as frequently as 1-year renewals, sometimes 5-year renewals. And usually it's tagged to the duration of the use of the object, whether it's an exhibition or research or education.
We're speaking with Kirk Johnson. He's the SANT director of the National Museum of Natural History. Now, I know that you are a paleontologist. You have others on staff. What about the Army Corps of Engineers and the other federal agencies that are involved in your upcoming exhibit? Because I understand that some you're getting from the Bureau of Land Management, the Interior Department. How well spread is this expertise?
It's pretty widespread. If you think about the federal agencies that have paleontologists on staff, there are definitely some in the Bureau of Land Management. There's some in the Forest Service as part of the USDA. There's paleontologists in the National Park Service. There are obviously paleontologists at the Smithsonian. And there are still some paleontologists in the U.S. Geological Survey, although that branch of the government closed its branch of paleontology in 1993. And by various statutes, the Smithsonian Institution holds fossils and other objects from various of those agencies. There's long been a relationship between those agencies and the Smithsonian. In fact, for many years, we had U.S. Geological Survey paleontologists housed at the Smithsonian. And many of the agencies that do scientific research that results in collections have staff housed at the Smithsonian Institution, which is the sort of the nation's repository for those kinds of specimens.
It also raises the question, though, how many valuable fossils and other artifacts are there on federal land that haven't been discovered yet? I mean, do you have any idea about the potential?
Oh, the potential is almost limitless. I mean, most paleontologists realize that there haven't been that many paleontologists, and there's a huge volume in the Earth's sedimentary cover such that we really know that most of the best fossils remain in the ground. And that presents a number of management opportunities and challenges. In 2009, there was the Paleontological Resources Protection Act passed in the omnibus bill, the first one under the Obama administration. And the both the Department of the Interior and the USDA are now doing their regulations around that law. So there's a lot of discussion about how we manage fossils on federal land.
All right. So that's to be determined. But tell us, so what are you going to do with the T-Rex now that it's all at the museum?
Well, the first step is to actually do a digital three-dimensional scan. There's this great new technology that allows us to make 3D scans of 3D objects, and then to build digital models of those objects. And in the case of the Tyrannosaurus rex, that's very helpful because our ultimate goal in the exhibit is to mount this animal in a life posture, standing life posture. But to do that, we have to take these bones that have been turned to stone, and we have to make steel armature that will hold the bones, while not damaging the bones, but hold the bones in a lifelike posture. And it's much easier for us to do that the digital rendering of the entire animal than it is to do it on a trial basis with the actual bones. So we'll scan the bones, make a 3D model, and then position the animal in a way that looks most lifelike given the distortions that are embedded in the bones. Because the bones have been buried for 66 million years, and as a result, they're somewhat distorted by being buried under all that sediment. So it's not the same as mounting bones of a modern animal whose bones have not been distorted.
But am I right in thinking that this 3D technology has never been applied to this type of thing before?
No, I mean, there's a number of people around the world who now are quickly jumping on this, and one of the great applications is the scanning of fossil skeletons, because most fossil skeletons are unique. They represent individual animals, and there really aren't that many complete fossil skeletons. So the whole field is getting very excited about the potential of sharing scientific data using 3D scans of whole animals. And this replaces the traditional paleontological technique of simply line drawings or hand drawing of these renderings, which are simply two-dimensional artistic renderings, as opposed to now a really accurate three-dimensional rendering of the entire skeletons.
Yeah, it sounds like it potentially could be even more scary than the T-Rex skeletons that we've been seeing before, right, if you're able to capture some of the life of the animal. So I have to ask you, though, with this exhibit not opening until 2019, clearly a lot of work to happen between now and then, I can only imagine the unhappy messages you're receiving from parents of young kids who might be reaching their prime dinosaur years before 2019. What are you doing to appease them?
We've certainly anticipated that, and we'll be opening Thanksgiving. We'll be opening an exhibit called "The Last American Dinosaurs" in the second floor of the museum, which is a 5,000 square foot exhibit about Tyrannosaurus rex and the other dinosaurs and animals that lived with Tyrannosaurus rex in the plains of eastern Montana 66 million years ago. So we will actually have continuous display of dinosaur fossils and other fossils in the museum while we are renovating the main hall itself. So we're quite aware. We have over 7 million visitors a year to the National Museum of Natural History on the Mall, and that's the most visited museum in the Western Hemisphere and the second most visited museum in the world. And we're very, very aware that lots of people come to see the dinosaurs, and they will be able to see the dinosaurs. Not as many. And in 5 years, when we do open the new exhibit, it will be a phenomenal exhibit, 32,000 square feet, and it will talk about the entire history of life on Earth, including in most fossil exhibits that you've ever seen in the past, end in the past, but this exhibit will actually end sometime in the future as we include the role of humanity in the history of life on Earth.
All right, great things ahead. Kirk Johnson is the SANT Director at the National Museum of Natural History. And, Kirk, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Emily, thanks so much.